WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
It's not groupthink. It's common sense.
I was saying that.
Sports Talk Saturday.
Four touchdown
game. And my producer has an evil smile on his face, like, "Oh, I'm grabbing that."
That smile you gave Derek is the same smile he gave Nate for years.
I'm just a meat bag with skeleton Gundam parts.
Made out of pure disappointment.
We are just mechs with blood and meat instead of robot parts. The only thing is that we're saying the same thing. We're not robots, though.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Welcome into another Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley, doing the usual problem causing, and we managed, I think I figured it out. Howard Simon had said, you know, without paying a fee, anything like that, sometimes you just got to get lucky. That's all it is.
Yeah.
What the hell does that even mean?
Don't worry about it.
I listened to the open, and it confirmed everything I always knew about you.
Well, yeah.
You're nuts.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're both on the same page
on
that one.
You realize what building we work in, right?
Yeah.
Sanity is not required.
Yeah, I just kind of thought, I don't know how you still have this job. I kind of thought at some point people would catch up to you, and I
haven't caught up to me, Howard. It's actually like one of the most infuriating things in my life.
I feel for Joe. I would just like to go on record as saying, you know, good, nice young kid. Seems like he's got a good career ahead of him.
No, that's a great resume builder. Having to try to reel me in.
That's true. If you can work with Derek, you can do a show with anybody.
If you can reel me in, that's how it goes.
Well, I don't know that it's actually possible to reel you in, as evidenced by that open.
Well, that was Frank Arcuri with me in that.
Okay.
In that clip.
Was that in your younger, crazier days, now that you've matured and you've gotten older and
that was a year
mellowed?
Ago.
Okay, well, yeah. So much for that argument.
It's like trying to reel in a Marlin. Just not going to happen.
But also, Frank is one of my closest friends. He brings out the worst in me.
Okay.
As friends should do.
Yeah, I guess so. So what's on the docket for you fellas today? What are we doing?
We got Bills. We got Sabres. Brian Colesi will join us.
Oh, very cool.
In about 8 minutes or so.
From Europe?
Not yet.
Oh, he's not out there yet.
He'll
be out there for the games against the Devils?
Yes.
Okay.
Very cool. He'll be out there for the regular season when it starts next week.
Very nice.
All right, guys. As we usually do, nonsense, the opening bant.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, you said something to me out in the newsroom, and I thought to myself, this would be a fun one for like a little generational style bant.
Oh, great.
Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, no,
let's see what the old guy thinks.
No, really, this is actually a fun little thing here. Joe was mentioning how he beat with Sonic Unleashed, right?
Yeah, I replayed it just randomly.
So then the
yeah.
first thing I thought was, okay, this is going to have three unique answers to it. What's the first video game you guys have ever played? See, I love that laugh immediately.
Because you're just, first, you're not going to know what I played. You'll have never heard of it. And then you're going to laugh when I describe it.
Well, first of all, when Jeremy and I, back in 2020, we had like a whole video game segment, and you were like very lost on what we were talking about.
Of course. Did you, whatever you just asked about, was that a game? Something Unleashed?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Sonic?
Yeah. Sonic.
I thought maybe you were talking about like the drive-in place to go get food at. And I thought, what, is it a day when they throw burgers at people?
Well, the reason I also ended up on this question was, Joe finished a newer, well, not even a newer Sonic game, but it was the first game that I had ever played, Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega Genesis. And I'm like, we're going to have three very uniquely different answers here, because every week he makes me feel like I need a cane.
So that's why you brought me in, to make you feel younger.
No, I just love the perspective, actually. It comes from an actual, like, genuine place.
Are you on your internet?
Yes,
I'm on my internet. Type in what I'm about to tell you so you can look at it, because I'm sure neither one of you have ever heard of this game.
All right, let's do this.
I want you to type in Pong, P-O-N-G, by Atari.
I've actually played Pong on an Atari
before. Pong still exists?
Well, variations
of it, yeah.
Yeah, my grandparents have an Atari, so like I booted that up when I was a kid.
But I'm going to guess it's a little more advanced than the Pong I played in the 1970s. So the Pong in the 1970s was basically a little white dot on the screen. and you'd have essentially a paddle.
You had a rectangle.
Yes, a little line.
I know what you're talking about.
And it would go to a wall, basically, and come back and hit it and bounce back and hit it and bounce back. And it could change directions and it could get a little faster. And you think about it now with what we have and you look back and go, oh, my dear Lord, this is the most boring video game that was ever created. And yet, when we got Pong, we thought it was the coolest thing in the world. Like, oh my God, there's a game on my television. This is really hard to play. And we just move the line up and down to hit the little dot to push it the other way so it comes back. Pong.
I like
no
Pong.
Announcers. There was audio with it. It made a little noise.
The little dink
it.
Noise.
Boop, boop, nice.
Bleep, bleep. Yeah.
All right. So Pong, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Mm-hmm. Cars, the movie tie-in game for PlayStation 2. So the movie Cars.
Wow.
Just your face right there, Howard. That was great.
Yeah. Wow. No, yeah. I think that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was my first game
there it is.
Played.
Evan, you got an answer on that one. First video game you ever played.
The first one I sometimes think of is...
Not think of. First that you ever played.
Super Mario Brothers 3.
Okay, Super Mario Brothers 3. All right. You managed on an older one there.
Yeah, my dad had a Super Nintendo, and we played Super Mario Brothers 3.
There you go. Nice.
First one I played with my kid was something called Backyard Baseball.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You guys
one.
Ever play that?
Mm-hmm.
Pablo Sanchez, the major league characters, but as, you know, little kid-looking characters.
Yeah.
And it was really cool, because actually that got Jonathan into being a baseball fan. And when the game came out, it must have been right around Sosa McGuire time, I guess.
Yep.
And he became like a huge Sammy Sosa fan, which was my first real dilemma as a parent to try and explain to him why you should not be a Sammy Sosa fan. But I let it slide, and he was like a big, that's one of his first favorite players because of Backyard Baseball.
Pablo Sanchez, the GOAT.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Pablo Sanchez.
Always first pick when you were playing Backyard Baseball.
Yeah. What? How? The first game my dad and I played together was one of the NCAA football games when they were, well, they made them now, but when they made them before. And he would have me as the franchise quarterback of Michigan and take me all the, like, I was a non-playable character. I thought I was playing with, like, a controller that wasn't on. But, you know, that kind of thing. So that
there
was
my,
that's how I got into football early on, you know. So it was pretty cool.
There we go. Well, Howard, thanks for sticking around.
My
I appreciate
pleasure.
This.
Nice to see you, fellas.
Yeah, a little bit of opening bat, get things going. And then let's get to business. Mm-hmm. As Brian Koziel talks with us, getting the Sabres ready to go for next week and having themselves a preseason that, on both fronts in Europe and in America, has been very solid.
Mm-hmm.
Say hi for me and don't mention the Orioles to Brian.
I will not.
Okay.
I'll make
okay.
sure of it.
It's not going well.
It's
right
not.
Now.
Yep. And we'll keep away from that.
All right.
I know better than anyone here, the man I'm talking to on this one. Baseball sometimes can touch a sore subject.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, that hat ain't giving anything away or anything.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. You should go to break. You try and stay on time for a change, would you?
I mean, I've learned from the best.
There's a format clock for a reason.
I'm breaking it literally right now.
Yeah.
That's how we go.
I'm going to leave. Nice to see you, boys. Have a great show.
That's Howard Simon for everyone there. And Brian Koziel coming up next. We'll talk Sabres on the other side. As Sports Talk Saturday, well, let's shift into business mode here on WGR.
Possession for Thompson. He's got a man wide open to the far circle. Shot scores. There it is. J.J. Paterka. In his hometown and their new home rink gets a goal. And the Sabres are up 5-0. And the smiles say it all.
Dan Dunleavy on the call. J.J. Paterka amongst the players scoring in the nice little exhibition between the Sabres and Red Bull.
Yes.
Red Bull Munich.
Does not give you wings. Not that one.
Not that one, I guess.
No, but Paterka looks great.
Paterka.
The team looks great. But again, the preseason pledge got across the heart. Hand that.
They also
in the air.
Have been. They've also been facing a majority of AHLers.
Yes.
And
yes.
non-big club teams.
Right.
Like, but.
You, so
the
they
Sabres
should
have
be a, looking that good.
They should be looking
seeing,
that good.
We're and seeing something good.
But that's mm-hmm. fine. Like, they should be dominating these preseason games. Meanwhile, now back in the home front here. Sabres are still winning. Doesn't
right.
matter that there's no NHLers on their roster right now in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
They're just still winning. So, clearly, this means they're going 82-0, right?
Yeah.
Clearly.
I think so.
But why don't we get Brian Koziel's take on this? Get us a little bit more rational here as Brian Koziel now joins us here on the Wester Hotline. Brian, good morning to you. And, of course, I feel like I'm going to get stuck in the trap again of being hyped about the Sabres, but I don't care.
Yes, good morning. I'll be the wet blanket here if you're looking for that. I believe the Devils went undefeated last year in the preseason with Lindy as their coach, and then he eventually halfway through the year got fired. So I don't know if there's any correlation to that. However, there we go. I'll get that out of the way. They only have one really thing they can do, and that is play well and at times look dominant, and they're doing that. So you have to give them at least credit for that. Yes, they're playing teams that on paper don't have a lot of NHL players on their roster, but all they can do is go out and dominate the game, and I really think they are. I mean, even, you know, we're seeing the AHL group do the same. I mean, it's AHL versus AHL in some of these games that are here back in the United States, and they're doing the same. I mean, the other night against Ottawa, I know, you know, they still trailed late in that game, but possession time, everything was in their favor. The shots were 41-16 in favor of the Sabres. So at least, you know, I think what we can take from all of this, regardless of how much value you actually put in the win and the loss, is the fact that maybe Lindy Ruff's mentality for what he wants his organization to be about, I feel like that has been consistent, whether it's been with the NHL group or with the AHL group. We're seeing some trends that we didn't see over the last three or four coaches, and that is, I think, something that is promising, because those are the trends that we always feel like they lack. They are trends that we know doesn't necessarily always translate, or that these translate into the playoffs, and that is playing with pace, that is playing around the net, that is willing to maybe move the puck at a little quicker, momentum on the power play. So all these sort of things that the Sabres have been struggling with or being consistent with, and these things that we know maybe can also win in the playoffs, Lindy seems to at least gotten that point home here early. So if that translates to the regular season, then I think you can be having these higher hopes.
Brian, of course, the Sabres have been one of the, I'd even call it a bit of unluckiest organizations. Of course, part of it's earned, but to still be in a league where half the teams make it, and then one of their best stretches, they fall 1 point short. So, and then last year, they're not good, but they're in the race throughout that one, whereas last year's point totals, they would have cleared it. So what is it, though, that this year, Brian, that you're looking for the Sabres to finally be able to succeed in terms of consistency and being able to actually break this playoff drought?
Well, I think firstly, and this probably is an easy one to say, is don't put yourself in a hole in the first month of the season. I mean, when have we seen them bury themselves and we're sitting there Thanksgiving and we're debating, like, is it done already? Like, you can't do that. They have to get off to a good start. I'm not saying they have to be in first place in the Atlantic Division, but they can't be in 13th in the conference. It's something that has been a pattern regardless of who the coach is here over this playoff drought, and they have to stop that. They did have, you know, that one good start, and then they had that horrible losing streak, and that kind of washed each other out there, but they have to be able to play above 500 hockey points-wise in this first month. And I think the schedule sets up so that they can do so. Yes, they start, obviously, in Europe here, but I think if you're going to have a global series event where you're traveling overseas and playing, doing it to start the season is the time to do it. Your body is fresh. This team now will, this NHL group that played yesterday in Munich will not have played for a week. So in terms of, you know, the fatigue and the travel and the jet lag and all that sort of stuff that may go with an event like this, because you're starting the season with it, I think all that gets thrown out the window. And they return home after playing on a Saturday, and they're not going to play at home again, or they're not going to play a game until the following Thursday. So I think they have plenty of recovery time. So what is a highlight piece of playing in this global series, there's always negatives that go with that. I think that chip of the travel and the fatigue and all that can go with it, I think that kind of gets thrown out here. So that part, to me, I think can help them get off to a good start. Now, what else do I think is? It's the schedule itself. They play in October at home almost the entire month once they get back home from this trip. They start at home for the entire first week. They've got their opening game, obviously, against a team in the Kings that they just found out that they're losing their one of their best players in Drew Doughty. Yes, then they have Florida, but then they have a short road trip that takes them very closely here. Pittsburgh, Columbus, Chicago, that's you know, easy travel. And then you have three more home games. So you only just have those three road games the entire month of October. There's space in between them. So if you want to play Ukko-Pekka-Luukkonen in a lot of these games, you have the opportunity to do so. So I think the first month sets up really nice for them before they get into November, where you start to get some more games and some more kind of jammed in areas. So long-winded story here. Don't get off to a bad start. They have to be able to get themselves, I think, take advantage of the schedule early. And the vibe what the players have and the energy that they have right now around Lindy Ruff and what he brings, none of them are, when they're asked about Lindy, I find this surprising. You know, all the reporters are Paul Hamilton. They're all asking, you know, what do you think about Lindy? What's he done? None of them have said they love it, but they all say they need it. And to me, that was kind of basically an alarm set off about the previous regime and regimes, that they know that Lindy's working them hard. They know that he's not going to let them get away with anything, and that, yes, he even may take away ice time. I'm not saying that I'm expecting them to gush over him, but it is weird how they phrase it. They say, yeah, he's working us hard, but we need to be like, they're mature enough to realize that they needed it. And I think that's definitely what was lacking from these last set of coaches before Lindy came in.
Yeah, Brian, absolutely. So you've seen the Sabres star players kind of regress over the last season, right? Who do you think really bounces back this season, if anybody?
Well, I think one thing that they're going to try to do is figure out a way to get Tage Thompson involved differently on the power play. We know that was a major part of him getting almost 50 goals 2 years ago, was that big blast one-timer on the circle. And Lindy knows they've taken that away. So I think they're going to move him around. I don't think you'll see him always sitting at the circle, like with the stick wind up in the air, ready to go. I think they're going to move him around. I think that will help. Thompson's a big guy. He can play in traffic. He can play in front of the net. So I think you'll see him moved around there to the point where maybe we'll see Thompson back in the 40s. There's one player to me that I thought was maybe at the top of the list of being most disappointing in terms of offensive production last year, and that was Dylan Cousins. So getting his swagger back, getting his confidence back. Cousins held himself very accountable last year. He said he knew with the contract that he had to be a guy that produced and that he wasn't. And I know he scored yesterday. His type of game in terms of what Lindy is wanting them to do, I think fits together very nicely. So I think that would be my other guy, that if there's going to be a rebound for the Sabres in the standings, they have to get much, much, much better production out of Dylan Cousins. It may be tough for him to ever even earn that contract that he got coming off of that career-high season 2 years ago, but it has to be way better than what it was last year. He was so inconsistent. Many times, you know, snake-bitten with hitting posts and finding ways to miss nets. I think this is a guy this year that really has to step up his game. And I think if he does, I think then that can be another huge hurdle in their way to getting themselves back into the postseason.
Brian Koziel joining us on the Wester Hotline. Sabres, quote-unquote, B-squad playing against Columbus tonight. And it does look like our own Paul Hamilton reporting that Columbus does have a NHL lineup coming in here against Buffalo today. Players like Kent Johnson, Boone Jenner, Sean Corrali, Cole Sillinger, Adam Fantilli, Ivan Provorov, Zach Werenski, they're all in the lineup here tonight. So if the Sabres can pull off a nice little win here on the home front with the likes of Ryan Johnson, Isaac Rosén, Noah Ostlund also having himself a really nice highlight reel to close out Ottawa the other night, it'd be a nice win and a confidence boost for guys that are going to be heading down to Rochester for the most part here. Brian, when it comes to the Sabres and it comes to the expectations of this team this year, there's one question you and I had when we were at the Prospects Tournament, and that is, there's a team that needs to go down. There's a team that needs to come crashing down to earth. And the biggest question is, in the Atlantic, who's the most likely that you would suspect to come crashing down? Because we all know it's not going to be Boston. We thought that was going to happen, and no, they're still as strong as ever.
Yeah, I'm the clown on the radio every year that had predicted Boston would come back, so I'll stop doing that. And
it's an educated wish, Brian.
Putting the pie in my face every year. yeah, Toronto makes a coaching change, but their roster is pretty much the same in terms of the big names. Florida just won the Cup. I don't see any sort of holes in that team. So those three spots to me, I honestly don't see anybody else in the Atlantic. I don't see Tampa, Detroit, Buffalo, Ottawa, any of that group kind of filtrating into that top three. I think it'll be Panthers, Bruins, Leafs in some order. I think that's a very safe bet, unless there's some sort of catastrophic set of injuries to one of these teams. I guess the team that would be next that made the postseason last year, the two wild cards to me, I think, are that jump out. Tampa Bay, they lose Stamkos, another year older. We talk every year how they look slower. They still have Vasilevskiy and Net, so that can always be a piece of the puzzle that gets them success. And then the Capitals. Somehow last year, remember, despite the fact that they had a minus 37 goal differential, they were able to make the postseason and sneak in. I think that that has to be two right there. I always like to count the Islanders out, but they find ugly ways to win. They got hot at the end of last year. But wild card race-wise, I look at the teams that were the two wild cards in the East. It was Tampa. It was Washington. I'm counting on age to come into play here. I'm counting on the fact that Tampa lost one of their big stars in Stamkos off to Nashville, that maybe those can be two spots that open up. I don't have a lot of faith in Pittsburgh being any better for the same reasons that I just argued Tampa and Washington. I don't think Philadelphia on paper is better than Buffalo. I know they finished 3 points better than them in the standings. So could Detroit also be thinking the same, that, hey, we're the one that's going to step in this year? I think so. Ottawa might be thinking that as well with the acquisition of Allmark and thinking, hey, we're going to be in a lot of games this year with a quality goaltender. Well, there's two spots right there. Do the Sabres maybe grab one of those? That would be the two teams for me. It's Tampa, it's Washington, that I think that for a realistic goal that the Sabres can finish ahead of, those would be the two that I feel like they have to be aiming at, and then that could be where you grab your wild card.
Brian, of course, though, when it comes to those teams ahead of Buffalo, obviously Florida's the one I'm not touching with a 10-foot pole, but there are questions amongst the other two at the top there in the Atlantic. With Boston having these negotiation issues with Jeremy Swayman, they may not have him to start the season. And then, of course, Toronto, I don't know what it is with them. It seems like they're still running it back with this core. They're running it back with this group that seems to fail within the postseason, especially in the first round. Those are two teams that are going to have question marks coming in. Those are questions that are likely to be answered later in the season, but they're teams that I am going to keep interest in here when it comes to a possible shift in the regime, so to say, of the Atlantic Division.
Yeah. Toronto, as long as they can play the style that they do during the regular season, I think will still earn enough points to be in that group. I mean, they led the Eastern Conference in goals. They were the only team to score over 300. Their goaltending, we know, always can be in question, but they still have a ton of big names that know how to put the puck in the net. And I think regular season-wise, they can play that style and get to that, 100 points or so that they need to really secure a top three spot in there. Boston, if they don't have Swayman for a while, that could maybe open the door there. The Bruins just seem to draft well. They seem to find guys that fit their third and fourth lines that contribute all the time and contribute offensively. That's the one thing I know that we've talked about quite a bit, that with the Sabres, that you look at these other teams and you say, why can't the Sabres be with those teams? Well, some of it has to do with the third and the fourth line. I feel like the Bruins have been the model of players that come from the third and fourth lines that find their role within the team and just thrive on it and do it well. And for when we look at and dissect what Kevyn Adams did with the Sabres roster this offseason, that is one area that I will give him a big check mark for. The revamping of line 3 and 4 for the Sabres, I think this is the best that we've seen since maybe a team that has made the playoffs. I think that they've got, not only do they have depth, but they have guys that are hard to play against. They have guys that are fast. Just watching what McLeod even did yesterday on his one chance to the net, I think you're going to see that burst of speed from him in a lot of opportunities and chances this year. The line that, of course, that fans seem to me to be excited about, and I think, I think arguably so, Lafferty, Malenstein, and Obey Kubel, that group, probably maybe going out to face the top unit of the other team or trying to grind them down a little. Those three guys seem to just be thriving playing together because they all love doing what they do, which is go to the net, make it tough, win battles, all these sort of things. So I think the bottom six with Jason Zucker and his leadership, McLeod I mentioned already, I think that's a really nice transformation So then if you go back to the previous question you asked me, like, who needs to step up? Well, if the top six can even just get slightly back to their offensive form, I think it can be enough for them to get in. So I want to give Kevin Adams kudos very much so for what he did with that bottom six. I still wish there could have been some sort of trade with the fact that the Sabres have still a ton of draft capital or had a ton of draft capital and have a lot of prospects that they could have added another score to the top six. But the third and fourth line, I look at it and I say, wow, that's as good as it's been in a decade at least.
Brian, goaltending. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen had a phenomenal season last year, and you know he was kind of hot and cold leading up to that. So do you think he can replicate and even build on that performance from last year? And then also, just what are your thoughts on Devon Levi? Could they create a pretty dynamic duo?
I think so. I mean, the question is going to be ultimately is, will there be enough games for Devon Levi, to me? And that would be, you know, a good thing, because Lukanen's playing so well, you want to keep playing him. Lukanen last year, when there was that stretch in January and February where he was putting up like Vezina-like numbers, he played virtually every single game. Even did had a couple of back-to-backs in there when the Sabres were still in the race. So he shows that he can handle it. If we look at past history of how Lindy Ruff's handled goaltenders, for whatever that's worth, we know he's had Hasek, we know he's had Miller. But even in Dallas, he rode Lehtinen quite a bit. So like, you've got, when he has a guy that he believes in, he's not afraid to maybe play him a little bit more than the average coach does in the NHL. So the question is then, is there enough games there for Levi that he can still develop? I think that what we've seen in the preseason would indicate that it's definitely going to be Luukkonen and Levi here, at least for a while to start the season, because Reimer hasn't even played. He hasn't played in any of the games with the NHL group. He hasn't played with any of the, as you said, kind of Group B with the Amerks group. He's not getting in anywhere. So to me, that would say, okay, there's really no thought that he's going to be the backup with the NHL team to start the season. At least, you know, for the first month or two, I got to think it's going to be Luukkonen and Levi. As long as Levi can handle maybe playing once every four and handle that well, and the coaches feel like, yes, he's still developing the way we want him to, then I think it can work. It's been a while since we've gone into a season not having to question goaltending. Maybe you even have to go back to like Robin Lehner, even before we say we really are thinking like there's somebody back there that gives you a chance to win. Luukkonen last year gave them so many opportunities to win. All those 3-2 losses, 2-1 losses, 1-0 losses where Luukkonen was amazing. And, you know, I'm sitting there on postgame saying, how did they lose this game? Well, because they couldn't score. Their money guys that are paid to score couldn't figure out a way to get a goal. Their power play went 0-for-5, that sort of thing. So I think for this year, I just mentioned it, the third and fourth line has been the best it's been in a while. I think goaltending one and two as a combo, that is also the best it's been in a while.
You mentioned the power play, the accursed thing from last year. In these preseason games and even through the prospects tournament, like, that philosophy is there of movement. And hopefully it looks like, Brian, from what you're seeing, how's that shift in philosophy looking on the ice so far?
Yeah, I think it looks good. I mean, yesterday, I know they had a little more ice to work with, but if you watch them move the puck, it's quicker. If you watch where their bodies are, they're more around the net. There's more movement. I think last year, this stuck with me all year. I remember talking with Marty Baran on one of the intermissions, and he goes, look, you know, why, you know, I asked him, I said, you, from a goalie standpoint, you studied power plays, you obviously defended power plays. Why is the Sabre power play struggling? And he said, because it's easy to predict what's happening. He said it was all perimeter passing and little movement. So he said it was easy to cover Tage Thompson's one-timer because everybody was essentially in the same spot. And he said there was very little movement. And he said a lot of times also, too, from a goalie's perspective, there wasn't a ton of traffic. So he's like, you don't have to battle to try to find to see where that puck is. But he said it was all perimeter movement, not a lot of quick passing, a lot of holding of the puck. And he said that's why he thought it was very easy and predictable to defend. So I think you're going to see a little bit difference from that this year. Just hearing when Lindy Ruff met with the media and talking about the power play, he said, look, teams took away the Thompson shot and the Sabres did nothing to adjust for that. And I think we're seeing that with the power play now. We're seeing more bodies in front. I think we're seeing quicker passing. I also think we're seeing a little bit more movement from what would be normally, I guess you'd call the perimeter players. They seem to be willing to move positions and to handle the puck and then move and then pass and then go. Kind of similar more to a basketball idea in the sense that, hey, if you don't have the ball and you're not moving, you're wrong kind of thing. Like, once you make that pass, go move somewhere else and create space or create a lane or, you know, like in basketball, you'd say set a pick for somebody, that kind of thing. I think it kind of works that way in hockey, too. If you're moving and you're unpredictable, it makes it much more difficult to defend. So I think so far from what we've seen from the power play in these preseason games, I think they're getting that. So, again, we always have to remind everybody they're playing against a set of players that they on paper are more talented than. But I think at least the concept is the right one, considering what we watched last year and how it struggled.
Brian, well, we've got a couple minutes left here, and I'll poke your brain on this. Bills 3-0, heading to Baltimore tomorrow to try to get the 4-0 on the season here. How you liking what's been going on so far with the Bills here through these first 3 weeks?
Yeah, it's really, really impressive what Sean McDermott and Bobby Babbage have done on defense. I know it's fun to talk about what Allen is doing because it's juicy to talk about, but man, to think about the injuries on defense, to think about the changes that they went in this offseason of losing a lot of veterans and a lot of leaders and how they continue to just stymie these good offenses. I mean, I know Jacksonville's struggling, but they still have a very talented quarterback and a very talented running back in Travis Etienne and some good weapons. I know Evan Ingram wasn't there, but Miami the same way until Tua was hurt. And Arizona, for a half, they made that adjustment at halftime, and man, that worked out really well too against a very talented offensive team in Arizona, who I respect at least on paper what their talent is with Harrison and McBride and with Connor and with Murray. So that to me has been, even though I know Allen's getting the headlines, the amount of points the Bills are putting up is getting headlines, and as it should, what they're doing on defense with the injuries to me is just tremendous. What gives me hope that this team can continue to even get better is that we're hearing good news that, oh, Terrell Bernard might be coming back maybe very soon. Taron Johnson might be coming back very soon. Who knows, maybe Matt Milano down the road. So the fact that you're seeing these depth guys make plays, the secondary every year, whether it's loss of player, I mean, this year, obviously, the huge loss of the two safeties, and they continue to play well. So kudos to those two guys for getting it done defensively. They've defended Lamar Jackson pretty well in the McDermott era. I think as long as the Bills' offense has a, 7 out of 10 game in terms of their performance, I think they should have enough to win because I trust what they have done on defense this year and what they've done historically against Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. So I'm feeling pretty good about this game coming into tomorrow night.
Now, last couple things. Howard says hello, by the way.
Nice.
I'm not going to worry about mentioning other things about Baltimore. When are you heading out to Europe?
So I'm leaving for Prague on Wednesday. Should be there Thursday morning and going to go to the arena and check it out and hopefully get everything set so that we can do our normal hosting duties on Friday and Saturday for the game. Just a reminder to everybody, the opener here in Buffalo will be a 1 p.m. Eastern game. It's a 6-hour difference to Prague, so it'll be a 7 o'clock game there, 1 o'clock here. And then on Saturday, Derek, I know maybe next Saturday your show may be shifted around. It's a 10 a.m. game.
I was going to say, I'm guessing I'm not having the show next week.
Yes, you might be. Maybe you'll be doing a post-game show after a 2-0 start. That would be fun.
I mean, that would be fun. I might just tell Alan, yes, I want to just enjoy watching that game. You know, I don't need to come in. Yeah, we can take the week off. I'll let you guys handle it.
Yeah, so I'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. I went to Stockholm for the other Global Series games, and it was a great experience. But that trip was in the middle of this, not in the exact middle, but that was in November.
Mm-hmm.
The team had already played a month of games, and they were playing pretty good as of that moment. They went there. They got swept by Tampa. Tampa banged them around quite a bit, real physical play, and the Sabres really never recovered from that. And I think, again, a piece of that travel and coming back in the middle of the season, I like how it's to start the year. I think the bodies will be fresher. I think all the negative that goes with a travel event like this, I think for the most part it's going to be nullified because they do have fresh bodies coming in, excitement coming in. Who's not jacked up to play in these games because it's the opening game. And you got a new coach, all those sort of things that go into it. So I think it's if you're going to play in this, it's at the right time. And yeah, I'm looking forward to not only being there for the games, but watching yesterday's game and the experience that is at these European events. We all know from, you know, if you're watching Premier League soccer or some of these other events in Europe, you know, even, you know me, a golf guy, like I like to watch the Ryder Cup when it's in Europe. There's all these chanting and singing and all these sort of organized things that are happening. When I was in Stockholm, they kind of did a lot of the same thing. I think we're going to see quite a few of, or quite a bit of it here in Prague. So even beyond doing a little sightseeing, which I'm looking forward to as well, I've never been there. I'm literally looking forward to this trip. And the hockey piece of it has me kind of jacked up because this is the most excited I've been about a start of a Sabre season in a while.
Yeah, exactly. Take some time. Try to make Paul pay for a couple of the checks and yes, enjoy yourself out there.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Brian, always appreciate talking to you, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great day.
That's Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline. He of Tita Green when that comes back in season.
I always enjoy listening to that. I've been getting into golf a lot more.
Actually, do we still have Brian there? Evan, do we still have Brian there? Oh, boy. Let's bring him back in real quick. Brian, yes. I would be remiss. There was something that we were supposed to promote, and my smooth brain almost forgot about it. As you are, look at that, Media Representative of the Year for the 2024 WNY PGA.
Yes, thank you, guys. Appreciate you bringing that up.
Yes,
Thanks. I want to thank the Western New York PGA on air for their nomination and ultimately their award of this. As you know, I'm very passionate about golf. Derek, I know you've been involved quite a bit with Tee to Green when you were part of the show. Evan, yep, who's producing today, is currently our main producer for Tee to Green. And I think you know because when you talk to me at 6 in the morning on a Saturday morning and I'm all excited to talk about golf, that you know that I'm passionate about it. And all the things that our team, this is a team award, Kevin Sylvester, Jeff Metis, Jeff Blank, and Evan and everybody that supports it, Alan Davis. We really try to be the golf voice in Western New York and promote golf and get kids playing and get everybody that wants to ever give it a shot playing and provide opportunities and create all those sort of passionate events and things like that. So while the award is something that I know they give out every year for media coverage, some of the stuff that we did with our fundraising and some of the other stuff we're really proud of with Tee to Green. So I'm happy to win that award. So I just wanted to thank the Western York PGA for that. And if you are a listener of Tee to Green in any capacity, or you've come to our Duster Putting Challenge to support it or any of the other things, thank you very much, because it motivates us to keep doing fun stuff for golf here in Western New York.
Matter of fact, I took part in one of those Duster Challenges a couple of years ago. Finished in last, didn't care, had a blast. but yeah, you had me and Kyle Powell out there for that. That was a good time.
Yeah.
So it's always great to be able to see you guys doing what you do. But also, like the minute I said Tee to Green, I'm like, oh my God, that's right. I have something that I need to bring up with Brian. So it's all about that. And like for someone that's a golf novice like me, you guys actually helped me understand the game when I was working it for Tee to Green an hour at a time every week. So always appreciate what you guys are able to do. Love Jeff and Kevin as well. Those guys are bonkers bonanza, funny in the morning as well. And they also know their stuff though. That's the other big thing. So Brian, thank you. Congratulations. We got an award-winning team here today. Howard and you were here in these chairs, and we got Brian winning an award. Where's my award? Do I get an award? Brian, thank you, though,
it's
again.
Being engraved, Derek. They're just working on it.
I'm scared of what it's called.
Figure out what the subtitle says underneath it.
I'm scared of what it's called. All right. Brian, thank
Thanks,
you.
Guys,
congratulations.
Congratulations.
And again, thanks. Have some fun in Prague. Take the time and see if Paul can cover for you a couple times here.
That's right. He should.
Use the award. Strong arm him.
Yeah. That's right. I know. It's tough. Paul, you got to have a really strong arm to get a Paul's wallet,
Yeah, thanks, that is guys. True. Brian Koziel on the Western Hotline. Tee to Green, Sabres pre, during, and post game.
Yes.
He does it for us.
Pre or post?
Pre, in-game, and post. He does it all, and he's one of the best people that I know when it comes to working in this place. So, and he makes working any Sabres game so much easier for you, even when they've been through a 13-year playoff drought.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go ahead and make fun of things coming up on the other side here. There's a lot that has happened The Booty Cheek of the Week has a lot of targets. We're going to find out which ones we aim at coming up next. It seems, after our discussion before the segment, we've got a similar topic here for the Booty Cheek of the Week.
Similar.
We're going to be going to the same place.
Yeah.
College football. All right, Joe. Try to explain to me the best that you can what happened last night.
Okay, so it's 3 days after the anniversary of the Fail Mary between the Seahawks and the Packers, right?
This was last night, right?
This was last night, the 27th. It's 38-34 Miami, University of Miami and Virginia Tech, right? No time left in the fourth.
Yep.
Virginia Tech throws a Hail Mary. Refs call it a touchdown on the field, right? It was caught in a pile of people. Like, don't get me wrong. I did watch the replay. Refs call it a touchdown. Miami's out on the field celebrating. Then Virginia Tech rushes out on the field celebrating. It was a nightmare scenario for both teams. Then the referees review it. And there's no indisputable evidence that it wasn't a touchdown. So where the rule is, you know, you can't reverse the call unless there's something like, oh my God, like he totally picked that ball off, you know. They reverse the call and rule it an interception.
Oh.
They overturn the touchdown on review. And Miami won the game, and they're 4-0, and Virginia Tech is now 2-2 on a technicality. Well, on something that was both the referees did this. Two arms up in the end zone.
Yikes.
And then they went and reviewed it.
They reviewed it and changed it.
Yes.
That's
overturned
tough.
On review based on no indisputable evidence. There wasn't enough to overturn.
Oh, boy.
All right. So sorry for Virginia
real
Tech
quick.
Fans.
I've got dishonorable mentions.
Okay,
dishonorable mentions. John Fisher, the owner of the Oakland Athletics, they had their last game at the Coliseum.
That's a sad moment.
This is a very sad moment. But also, you stink for how you treated things.
Everyone posted it with the Moneyball music underneath it.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's tough.
Yeah, I had two people, two friends go out there, including Frank. Actually,
really,
Frank was out there for the last game. Then, of course, the other dishonorable mention, the New York Jets with the Hassan Reddick situation. Rich Cimini of ESPN reporting Hassan Reddick apparently so frustrated with the Jets, he wouldn't mind being traded back to the Eagles. You know, how he got traded in the first place was the Eagles weren't going to pay him. But the Jets apparently have duffed this so bad. My target today, though, is UNLV. UNLV, well, now former UNLV quarterback Matthew Skula, saying that an assistant coach promised $100,000 through NIL for transferring to UNLV. They start 3-0, and Skula backs out, quits on the team. And on the surface level, it looks like, you know, okay, someone who just wanted to, like, up his value or something like that. However, this isn't the fault of NIL or players because, well, there's one thing here. Sluka and his representative get a slight honorable mention here because if it's not written down, don't do it. It was a verbal agreement.
Okay.
Get that in paper, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Get that written down or recorded. You got to have evidence of that.
Yeah, you need evidence.
Like, that's on you. If you're a representative, an agent, so to say, you're not doing a great job if you're not getting that in written form.
Mm-hmm.
But UNLV throwing out this hilarious promise of $100,000 to a quarterback to transfer there. But then, oh, hey, guess what? UNLV was in the news days later. This from Roger Sherman, covers the NCAA. UNLV committed to the Mountain West last week, but is reconsidering and might go to the Pac-12 because Utah State changed their mind. Also, the two leagues, the Pac-12 and the Mountain West, are suing each other. But yeah, it's the players' fault chasing the money, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yeah. So it's like UNLV in the news for two things that involve money. And it's almost like, hey, guys, stop ruining the sanctity of the of college football by chasing the dollar or throwing around the dollar. I don't mind players trying to do it because, like, the NCAA has been making so much money off the backs of them for free for decades. And, like, all this conference realignment is a joke. I shouldn't have Cal and Stanford playing in the ACC.
No. Nope.
The California Golden Bears should not be playing in the Atlantic Coastal Conference when they're on the Pacific Coast.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's bad. But no, tell me that the players are what's ruining. The players' greed is what's ruining college football. All right, we got to go. Coming up, you know, I think I'm going to stick to Sabres for a little bit here.
Okay.
Coming back, and then we got Sal Capaccio at 12:30 as the Bills fly out to take on the Ravens tomorrow night. Got plenty to do. Derek Kramer, Joe Cali, Evans on the board. You're listening to WGR